Did you notice how many storm references there were in the songs this morning?
Isn't that true?
Last week, we looked at Jesus, the master of heaven and earth. He disrupts the Galilean status quo kingdom. He draws a crowd, but suffers from the audience capture. He stills the storm. He delivers the man from Legion and sends him back to the Gentiles to be a witness of God's grace. The disciples were terrified of Jesus. The people who lost their pigs down into the Sea of Galilee were terrified of Jesus. Last week, Jesus was large and frightening. But there are a few terrors that grip parents like the loss of a child. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the sea, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the sea. In other words, rumors came he's coming back, and they come out of the cities and town by drove, just waiting. What's he going to do now? Is he going to heal someone? Is he going to say something? Jesus is the center of attention. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him. My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so she will be healed and live. You can imagine that no one was going to get in this man's way. He would fight any crowd to get through, to get to the front of the line and get Jesus' attention and say, Jesus, this is my daughter. We just sang, you can have all the world give me Jesus. At that moment, Jairus, for the love of his daughter, would brave any crowd, do anything. Jesus, just come and heal my little girl. There's nothing he won't do. Now this reminds me of a song that actually we referenced in a verse that we referenced in the song today with Lazarus, if Pete didn't know I was putting this in here. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. Not the daughter of someone you don't know. Jesus, Lazarus, is one of your good friends. You know him, he knows you. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory that God's Son may be glorified through it. And even if you just think about that and you know the story, you might say, how does Jesus use words? Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he rushed right away to heal him. Some of you said, well, Pastor, you stopped reading. So when he heard that Jesus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. He stayed where he was 2 more days so that Lazarus would die. So that Mary and Martha would be stricken by grief. You have to say, was that nice, Jesus? Do you know what Mary and Martha suffered? Now, Jesus, when he gets to the tomb, Jesus will weep and he'll be angry. But he's not angry at the fact that he intentionally took 2 more days to get to Bethany. Jesus knew what he was doing. And then he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. Now we have a different situation. Father, daughter, sick, dying. Jesus has been away on the other side of the lake doing who knows what. He doesn't know. He's just heard the rumor that Jesus is coming in. So he rushes with the crowd to the edge of the Sea of Galilee, and nothing is going to stop him from getting Jesus' attention. So Jesus went with him. Right away, didn't wait. A large crowd followed and pressed against him. I sort of get the image of an elevator. Have you ever been in an elevator with too many people and you're just kind of, when I was in London for my last trip, I had two big bags with me and I'm in this subway and I'm just crushed up against everyone. And then my stop came and I thought, well, I hope people are gonna forgive me for this. And I just plowed through and got out that door. Nobody liked it, but everyone understood. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. You have to know that once news got out that Jesus in Capernaum is relieving people of their demons and healing the blind and healing the lame and healing the sick, like we saw a couple of weeks ago, the text said it, people came from Judea, they came from Tyre and Sidon, they came from the Decapolis that we talked about last week, the 10 cities, they came from everywhere, people who had an illness. And how many times on Sunday morning don't we talk about the fact that you go to the doctor, and here now we have medical technology and science and all of these things, and nobody can tell Pete what's going on with him. And Richard, he had to be taken off of him. And Lily, first she was in for the diverticulitis, and then she had to be in for everything they did to her in the hospital. We all understand this. And this woman had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. Now, for most of us, that sounds like, yeah, there's a problem there. You should definitely see a doctor. But what we don't understand is that in our men's group, we're reading through the book of Leviticus. And last week, actually, we bumped into the text where if you actually accidentally touch something that defiles you, you have to go and do a sacrifice over at the temple, or you have to pass through a ritual bath or a cleansing or something until you can rejoin community. Even if you go back in the Old Testament and you go to the story of David and Bathsheba, you know, a lot of moderns are like, why is Bathsheba taking a bath and David looking on, peeking in from his castle? And what does that have to do with Bathsheba getting pregnant? Oh, well, if a woman has her period, she then has a period of ritual defilement because there's an issue of blood. And then after her period, she has a bath, which cleanses her, and now she's no longer defiled and she can practice religion with the rest of the community. So women had to endure that once a month. But this woman had it constant for 12 years, which meant, like the leper, she was cut off from the rest of her community. She could no longer live a normal life. I thought about putting some incidences because every now and then you'll hear something, usually coming out of Israel, that, well, if you have a particularly observant sect of Judaism, they don't want to sit on an airplane next to a woman or sit in seats where women have sat because there's a possibility of ritual defilement, and then yada yada and on this stuff goes. But this woman's life had been tremendously disrupted because of her medical issue. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors. And again, some of you can listen to that and say, yes, I suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors. And spent all that she had, and some of you will say, yes, I went to the doctor, I spent all that I had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. And when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd. Think about that subway. Think about first Jairus makes his way through the crowd. He's a man, he's got more strength. This woman has probably been avoiding crowds because she's going to defile everyone she touches. But at this point, she doesn't care. She's probably from a different town. She makes her way through the crowd, trying to get to the front. And she touches his cloak. because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Now, where on earth she got that idea? Actually, in some ways, maybe she got it from the book of Leviticus, because, of course, if someone just touches her clothes, they are defiled. And what they've seen from Jesus is that he's sort of like that sacrificial altar. He's sort of like the fire on the altar that the animal goes into, and the animal is destroyed. But maybe with Jesus, this whole defilement thing works in reverse. So maybe if she could just touch his clothes, somehow, some way, her life will change. And so she works in through the crowd, and she just gets close enough and touch. Immediately, her bleeding stopped. And she felt in her body that she was free from her suffering, but she's still in the middle of the crowd, so she's probably just backing away. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. Now, this is an incredible study, if you like theological terms, in the complexity of consciousness and Christology. Because Jesus heals this woman. Now, we don't know if Jesus is, because we've seen before, this will not end in death. She's asleep. We'll see Jesus use words in these ways. But he seemingly, sincerely says, power's gone out of me, unwittingly. He turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? And now the disciples are like, what? What do you mean, who? I mean, everyone's touching everyone right here. You see people crowding around you, his disciples answer, and yet you ask, who touched me? Now think of it from the woman's point of view. She made the trip all the way there, and she sees the big crowd around him, so she's going to work her way through and touch. And now she has the same experience that the disciples had last week, that the members of the town who owned the pigs had last week, that if this man is so powerful that even just touching his garment can cure something that he doesn't even know about, that has been plaguing me for 10 years, if he turns and says, you picked the miracle out of my pocket, what's he going to do to me? How angry is he going to be? I didn't even ask. I didn't say, Jesus, mind if I, no. Jesus, I need it. No. She just took it. Jesus could be really angry. And if a kind Jesus can still a storm and drive pigs down a bank or heal the sick and do any of these things, what could an angry Jesus do? But Jesus, looking around to see who had done it, then the woman, knowing that it had happened to her, came and fell at his feet. Remember just a minute ago, Jairus was falling at his feet. Now she falls at his feet, and she's trembling with fear because on one hand she knows she's caught. She had her hand in his miracle pocket. What's he going to do? And told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, this woman could very well have been older than him. Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. This is one of my favorite stories in the Bible because it shows Jesus' power and it shows his love. So what we talked about last week, these diverse excellencies. He can still a storm. And now he's energized by a father pleading for his daughter. Jesus is this towering figure that his disciples fear when he stills the storm, and the pig owners fear at the loss of their herd. So she quite rightly is afraid, trembling in fact. And what she finds in Jesus is this diverse excellency of utmost tenderness of a father's love. In a story which is all about a father's love, Jairus' love for his daughter. And now Jesus says to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." She's given a word that is probably more powerful than the miracle itself. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, a man of status and importance. And so, you know, if you're just sort of a rando out there and there's a tragedy in the family, maybe the surrounding people will know it. But if you're a synagogue leader, everybody in the synagogue knows your daughter, and everybody knows she's sick. And so the house is filled with support givers and well-wishers and casserole plates. And they say, "Your daughter is dead. You're too late." Jesus didn't get there in time. Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, and this is amazing, "Don't be afraid, just believe." That woman, nothing would get in her way for her to come and touch Jesus' clothes. And what he says to Jairus is, "You've sought me this far. Don't stop now, just that you hear your daughter is dead. Stay with me, Jairus. Stay with me. I know you think of me as a healer, but you don't know how strong I am. You don't know what I can do. You don't know how far I'm willing to take these things." Now, we know. We know the story of Lazarus. How far is Jesus willing to take these things? Lazarus is sick. Boy, I sure do love Lazarus and his sisters. What are we going to do for the next couple of days? What? You don't know Lazarus. You don't know Jairus. Hang in there with me. Don't be afraid. Don't let fear stop you. Just believe. Did you see that woman? Just believe. He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. The crowds were already out of hand. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. And he went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing?" And again, you just think, Jesus uses words sometimes and sets the stage. Jesus knows what's going to happen. She's dead. Everybody knows she's dead. They're all mourning. Is he trying to sort of add a little cover? What's Jesus doing? And I think, again, if you read through the Gospel of Mark, often you get Matthew and Luke who seem to use Mark. I think this stuff comes from Peter. Peter is just reporting what he saw. Peter can't necessarily make sense of it, but it's stuck in his mind. We go into this house, and everyone is wailing, and Jesus says the craziest thing. He says, "Why all this commotion and wailing?" What do you mean, why all this commotion and wailing? We all got here to support the family, and now we got word that she's dead. What else would you expect us to do? The child is not dead, but asleep. What? So they laugh at him. And we don't even know what kind of laughter it is. Because sometimes things are so bad and things are so hard, you're all out of tears and all you can do is laugh as relief or absurdity. And you don't know what to do. But remember, Jairus, don't be afraid, just believe. You're going to have to get through this moment of hearing that your daughter is dead. You're going to have to run this gauntlet of all the mourning and weeping in your crowd. Follow Jesus through this storm and get into this little room. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. And he took her by the hand. Now again, We just see that as, we don't even think about it. Remember how the woman who was defiled touched Jesus and became healed? So if you go back to the book of Leviticus with the men's group, and you read those early chapters, if you touch a dead person, you are ritually defiled and you have to go make a sacrifice. Jesus is going to touch a dead person. And guess what? He's not defiled. Guess what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen. And he said to her, and this is so tender, Talitha kum, which means, little girl, I say to you, get up. Have you ever read the book of Genesis? When God says, let there be light, and there is light. And let there be a firmament between the waters above and the waters below, and there's a space. Let the ground bring forth animals, and then they're there. And let the seas bring forth living creatures, and then they're there. Why do Jesus' Jewish disciples, who, contrary to every other culture in the world, says people are not gods, after they say Jesus, they start to think, not just who is he, but what is he? Talitha kum. Immediately, the little girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, y'all don't even need the next sentence. Everyone in the room just doesn't know what to think. But it's not a storm. It's not pigs. It's terror. And it's delight. She's alive. And she's not just, you know, the story is careful, and it's not just kind of like, no. She's up, and she's walking around. She's not just a little alive, she's healed. And he did this with a word. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this. And every time I read that, I think, so did you tell them she was asleep just to kind of keep a little cover? Because I tell you, when she walks out of that room, the parents and the disciples are not going to be alone in their astonishment. Trust me. And he told them to give her something to eat. If you go to death and back again, I'm sure you pick up an appetite. But again, it's another sign of, if you're really sick, I don't want anything to eat. Hey. Let's eat. She's restored. She's a 12-year-old girl. Here we are. Only that which has died can be raised. Only those who are sick can be healed. There are things in this world that shake even the faithful. There always are. One person said to me recently, we were talking, because, you know, now I'm on this crazy thing called the internet, and I'm talking to people of I don't care how many different persuasions, and a lot of people are used to be in church, not in church anymore, and they say things which, yeah, they make a lot of sense. I understand. I don't believe there is a good God because children die. That's a really hard one for us because, you know, I've been eating like crap, and I smoked all these years, and I live a reckless life, and then cancer gets me, and you say, look at how we live. But a kid, they didn't do anything to deserve this. And then they suffer and die, and the parents grieve, and everybody says, this is pointless. I get it. I get it. You look at this world, and we think that all the time. I get it. But these stories set us up to imagine a triumph. To imagine that, well, Jesus is going to be like medical insurance. Jesus is every time I pray. But then you live and you're in a church, and you know, children still die. Isn't Jesus the kind of Messiah that will heal all our infirmities and raise all our dead? When we ask, right away, so that we don't have to suffer? Isn't this still a world where children are robbed of life and parents robbed of children through no fault of their own? You see, if Jesus is just someone who fixes problems, the problems we feel, the problems that pinch, the problems that destroy us, well, he's one kind of Savior. But here's the strange thing about Jesus. He gets crucified. And if you read the stories, it seems he could have avoided it. In fact, his disciples know this. They're not terribly smart. But when they're up in Galilee and Jesus says, "We're going down to Judea," and his disciples say, I didn't read that. It's the next verse, actually, in John 11. The disciples are like, "Are you out of your mind? If you go down to Judea, they're going to kill you." And then if you read in the Gospel of Luke, he says, "We're going down to Judea." And his disciples say, "They're going to kill you." And Jesus says, "This is what's going to happen. I'm going to be arrested, taken into the hands of Gentiles, and killed, and God will raise me in 3 days. And the disciples don't say, "Oh, okay, let's go and let's do this." They don't do that. They don't want to go, but they go. And everything that Jesus says happens. And then you would think they would pause and say, "Now, remember, he told us we're going to go down here and he's going to be arrested and he was going to be killed and he's going to be raised in 3 days. So let's all go and sit around the tomb and welcome him back." Do they do that? No. Who's there? The women. Why are they there? What do they have in their hands? The embalming. Even the women. The only ones who show up at the tomb, they don't believe it either. It tells you something about our belief structures. What kind of Savior do we need in such a world? We certainly want the Savior that can seemingly allow that miracle to be picked out of his pocket by that woman and be able to call this little girl back to life with just a word. We certainly want that kind of Savior, but we need something even stronger. One who knows injustice. One who knows the terror, the power, the sorrow of death, not from the outside because he's seen everybody suffer, but not him. One who knows it from the inside. Because he was wrongly accused, and he was arrested, and he was tortured, and he was killed. There's no part of this that he doesn't know. How do we know? We see it from the inside. Without the cross, Jesus would be just another wonder worker, Savior, who got people out of the grip of tragedy, but didn't disrupt the entire status quo kingdom of which chronic illness and death are a part of the furnishing. Jesus was not satisfied with this. He is going all the way to the bottom of our rebellion and lift us up because we can't save ourselves. Even from ourselves. There's the story. There's the whole story. And it's placed in our lap. And it's laid down there for us. And what do we do with it? So Jesus tells his disciples, says, "Look, we're going down to Jerusalem. We're going to be delivered into the hands of Gentiles. I'm going to be killed, and in 3 days I'm going to be raised again." And not one of them bothers showing up at the tomb. Can we just sort of tell people this stuff? Jesus says to the crowd wailing for Jairus' daughter, "She's asleep." Jesus says to his disciples about Lazarus' illness, "This will not end in death." This is not how we believe. We don't believe just because someone tells us something.
It has to get in deeper. And so Jesus goes all the way to the cross. He descends into hell and is raised on the third day. There's the story. There's Christianity right there in a little package. You've all heard it before. But then how do we live it? Well, you imagine both the power, the terror, and then also the mercy. Daughter, your faith has healed you. Talitha, kum. All of that comes together. And how does Jesus want us to remember? Well, yeah, you need the pastor to talk about it a little bit. But he says, how is this going to stick with my people? All over the world, all different languages, all different nations, all the way until I come again. It's going to have to be deeper. So on the night he was betrayed, he took bread. And he broke it. And he said, this is my body. This is my body. This is my body broken for you. As often as you eat this, well, eat what? Bread. As often as you eat this, remember me. And when you do, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Okay. We're proclaiming his death. But what does that mean? It means, yes, he can still restore. Yes, he can free the demon possessed. Yes, he can heal the woman whose illness had her separated from her people. Yes, he can even raise the dead. But we proclaim his death, that he knows it from the inside until he comes. This is for you.